Believing such awful things about Nehemiah, knowing that Dorian and Kaol were safe, made the misery worth it.
Because it attracts too much attention, that's why.
Selena rolled her eyes, and Kaol glared at her.
Do I have to remind you who you are?
No, you remind me every day, she retorted. His brown eyes darkened. What was the point in being nice to her if he was only going to insult her the next moment? Dorian put a hand on her shoulder and gave Kaol a charming smile.
Relax, Kaol, he said,
and his hand slipped to rest on her back, his fingers grazing her bare skin.
Just take the night off.
Dorian turned her from the captain.
It'll do you some good,
he said over his shoulder, though the merriness faded from his tone.
I'm getting a drink,
muttered Kaol, and walked away. She watched the captain for a moment. It would be a miracle if he considered her a friend. Dorian caressed her back, and she looked at him. Her heart jumped into a gallop, and Kaol dissolved from her thoughts like dew beneath the morning sun. She felt bad for forgetting him, but she wanted Dorian. She couldn't deny it. She wanted him.
You look beautiful,
Dorian said quietly, running an eye over her in a way that made her ears burn.
I haven't been able to stop staring at you.
Oh, and I thought you hadn't even noticed me.
Kaol got there first when you arrived. And besides, I had to work up the nerve to approach you.
He grinned.
You're very intimidating, especially with the mask.
And I suppose it didn't help you that you had a line of ladies waiting to dance with you.
I'm here now, aren't I?
Her heart tightened, and she realized it wasn't the answer she'd been hoping for. What did she want from him? He held out his hand, inclining his head.
Dance with me?
Was there music playing? She'd forgotten. The world had shrunk into nothing, dissolved by the golden glow of candles. But there were her feet, and here was her arm, and her neck, and her mouth. She smiled and took his hand, still keeping one eye on the ball around them. Chapter 39. He was lost in a world of which he'd always dreamed. Her body was warm beneath his hand, and her fingers were soft around his. He spun her and led her about on the floor, waltzing as smoothly as he could. She didn't falter a single step, nor did she seem to care about the many angry female faces that watched as dance after dance passed, and they didn't switch partners. Of course, it wasn't polite for a prince to dance with only one lady, but he couldn't focus on anything beyond his partner and the music that carried them onward.
You certainly have a lot of stamina, she said.
When had they last spoken? It could have been 10 minutes or an hour ago. The masked faces around them blurred together.
While some parents hit their children, mine also punished me with dancing lessons.
Then you must have been a very naughty boy. She glanced around the ball, as if she were looking for something, or someone.
You're gracious with your compliments tonight.
He twirled her. The skirts of her gown sparkled underneath the chandelier. It's Yulmas, she said. Everyone's kind on Yulmas. A flash of what he could have sworn was pain shone in her eyes, but it was gone before he could be certain of it. He caught her around the waist, his feet moving to the beat of the waltz.
And how's your present?
Oh, she hid under my bed, then in the dining room, which is where I left her.
You locked the dog in your dining room?
Should I have kept her in my bedroom where she could ruin the carpets? Or in the gaming room where she might eat the chess pieces and choke?
Perhaps you should have sent her to the kennels where dogs belong.
On Yulmas? I couldn't think of sending her back to that wretched place. He suddenly felt the urge to kiss her, hard, upon the mouth. But this, what he felt, it could never be real. Because once the ball was over, she would go back to being an assassin, and he would still be a prince. Dorian swallowed hard. For tonight, though. He held her closer. Everyone transformed into mere shadows on the wall. Frowning, Kaol watched his friend dance with the assassin. He wouldn't have danced with her anyway, and he was glad he hadn't worked up the nerve to ask her.
not after seeing the color that Duke Parrington's face turned upon discovering the pair. A courtier named Otho stepped beside Kaol.
I thought she was with you.
Who, Lady Lillian?
So that's her name. I've never seen her before. Is she newly arrived to court?
Yes, said Kaol. Tomorrow he'd have a word with her guards about letting Selena out tonight. Hopefully by then he'd be less inclined to knock their heads together.
How are you doing, Captain Westfall? Otho said, clapping him on the back a bit too hard. His breath reeked of wine.
You don't dine with us anymore.
I stopped dining at your table 3 years ago, Otho.
You should come back. We miss your conversation.
It was a lie. Otho only wanted information about the foreign young lady. His reputation with women was well known in the castle. So well known that he had to seize courtiers as they arrived, or go into Rifthold for a different sort of woman. Kaol watched Dorian dip Selena, watched the way her lips widened in a smile, and her eyes burst with light as the Crown Prince said something. Even with the mask on, Kaol could see the happiness written across her face.
Is he with her? Otho asked.
The Lady Lillian belongs to herself and no one else.
So she's not with him?
No. Otho shrugged. That's strange.
Why?
Kaol had the sudden urge to strangle him.
Because it looks like he's in love with her, he said, and walked away.
Kaol's eyes lost focus for a moment. Then Selena laughed, and Dorian kept staring at her. The prince hadn't once taken his eyes off her. Dorian's expression was full of something. Joy? Wonder? His shoulders were straight, his back erect. He looked like a man. Like a king. It was impossible for such a thing to have occurred. And when would it have happened? Otho was a drunk and a womanizer. What did he know of love? Dorian spun Selena with speed and dexterity, and she snapped into his arms, her shoulders rising with exhilaration. But she wasn't in love with him. Otho hadn't said that. He had seen no attachment on her part, and Selena would never be that stupid. It was Dorian who was the fool, Dorian who would have his heart broken, if he did actually love her. Unable to look at his friend any longer, the captain of the guard left the ball. Caltaine watched in rage and agony as Lillian Gordana and the Crown Prince of Otterland danced and danced and danced. Even with a much more concealing mask, she would have recognized the upstart. And what sort of a person wore gray to a ball? Caltaine looked down at her dress and smiled. Bright shades of blue, emerald, and soft brown. Her gown and matching peacock mask had cost as much as a small house. It was all a gift from Parrington, of course, along with the jewelry that decorated much of her neck and arms. It was certainly not the dull, drab mess of crystal that the conniving harlot wore. Parrington stroked her arm, and Caltaine turned to him with fluttering eyelashes.
You look handsome tonight, my love, she said, adjusting a gold chain across his red tunic.
His face quickly matched the color of his clothes. She wondered if she could bear the repulsion of kissing him. She could always keep refusing, just as she had for the past month, but when he was this drunk, she would have to think of a way out as soon as possible. But she was no closer to Dorian than she'd been in early autumn, and would certainly make no progress with Lillian in the way. A precipice opened before her. Her head gave a brief, faint throb of pain. There were no other options now. Lillian had to be eliminated. When the clock chimed three, and most of the guests, including the Queen and Kaol, had left, Selena finally decided that it was safe for her to leave. So she slipped from the ball when Dorian went to get a drink, and found Ress waiting outside to escort her back. The halls of the castle were silent as they strode to her room, taking the empty servants' passages to avoid any too curious courtiers learning more about her. Even if she'd gone to the ball for the wrong reasons, she had had some fun dancing with Dorian. More than some, actually. She smiled to herself, picking at her nails as they entered the hallway that led to her rooms. The rush of having Dorian look only at her, talk only to her,
treat her as if she were his equal and more, hadn't yet worn off. Maybe her plan hadn't been such a failure after all. Ress cleared his throat, and Selena looked up to see Dorian standing outside her rooms, chatting with the guards. He couldn't have stayed long at the ball if he'd beaten her back here. Her heart pounded, but she managed a coy smile as Dorian bowed to her, opened the door, and they went inside. Let Ress and the guards think what they wanted. She unfastened the mask from her face, tossing it onto the table in the center of the foyer, and sighed as the cool air met her flushed skin. "Well?" she asked, leaning against the wall beside the door to her bedroom. Dorian approached her slowly, halting only a hand's breadth away.
"You left the ball without saying goodbye," he said, and braced an arm against the wall beside her head.
She raised her eyes, examining the black detail on the sleeve that fell just above her hair. "I'm impressed you got up here so quickly, and without a pack of court ladies hounding after you. Perhaps you should try your hand at being an assassin."
He shook the hair out of his face.
"I'm not interested in court ladies," he said thickly, and kissed her. His mouth was warm, and his lips were smooth, and Selena lost all sense of time and place as she slowly kissed him back. He pulled away for a moment, looked into her eyes as they opened, and kissed her again. It was different this time, deeper, full of need. Her arms were heavy and light all at once, and the room twirled round and round. She couldn't stop. She liked this, liked being kissed by him, liked the smell and the taste and the feel of him. His arm slipped around her waist, and he held her tightly to him as his lips moved against hers. She put a hand on his shoulder, her fingers digging into the muscle that lay beneath. How different things were between them than when she'd first seen him in Endovir. Her eyes opened. Endovir. Why was she kissing the Proud Prince of Otterlin? Her fingers loosened, and her arm dropped to her side. He removed his mouth from hers and smiled. It was infectious. Dorian leaned forward again, but she smoothly put two fingers against his lips.
"I should go to bed," she said.
He raised his eyebrows.
"Alone," she added.
He removed her fingers from his mouth. He tried to kiss her, but she easily swung under his arm and reached for the door handle. She had opened the bedroom door and slid inside before he could stop her. She peered into the foyer, watching as he continued to smile.
"Good night."
Dorian leaned against the door, bringing his face close to hers.
"Good night," he whispered,
and she didn't stop him as he kissed her again. He broke it off before she was ready, and she almost fell onto the ground as he removed his weight from the door. He laughed softly.
"Good night," she said again, heat rushing to her face.
Then he was gone. Selena strode to the balcony and flung open the doors, embracing the chill air. Her hand rose to her lips, and she stared up at the stars, feeling her heart grow and grow and grow. Dorian walked slowly back to his rooms, his heart racing. He could still feel her lips on his, smell the scent of her hair, and see the gold in her eyes flickering in the candlelight. Consequences be damned. He'd find a way to make it work. He'd find a way to be with her. He had to. He had leapt from the cliff. He could only wait for the net. In the garden, the captain of the guard stared up at the young woman's balcony, watching as she waltzed alone, lost in her dreams, but he knew that her thoughts weren't of him. She stopped and stared upward. Even from a distance, he could see the blush upon her cheeks. She seemed young.
No. New. It made his chest ache.
Still, he watched. Watched until she sighed and went inside. She never bothered to look below. Chapter 40. Selena groaned as something cold and wet brushed her cheek and moved to lick her face. She opened an eye and found the puppy looking down at her, its tail wagging. Adjusting herself in the bed, she winced at the sunlight. She hadn't meant to sleep in. They had a test in 2 days, and she needed to train. It was their last test before the final duel, the test that decided who the 4 finalists would be. Selena rubbed an eye and then scratched the dog behind the ears.
Have you peed somewhere and wished to tell me about it?
Oh, no, said someone as the bedroom door swung open.
Dorian.
I took her out at dawn with the other dogs. She smiled weakly as he approached.
Isn't it rather early for a visit?
Early? He laughed, sitting on the bed.
She inched away.
It's almost 1 in the afternoon. Philippa told me you've been sleeping like the dead all morning.
1? She'd slept that long?
What about lessons with Kaol? She scratched her nose and pulled the puppy onto her lap. At least nothing had happened last night. If there had been another attack, she would have heard about it already. She almost sighed with relief, though the guilt of what she'd done, how little faith she'd had in Nehemia, still made her a tad miserable. Have you named her yet?
He asked. Casual, calm, collected.
Was he acting that way for show, or was their kiss just not that important to him?
No,
she said, keeping her face neutral, even though she wanted to scream from the awkwardness.
I can't think of anything appropriate.
What about, he said, tapping his chin, Goldie? That's the stupidest name I've ever heard. Can you think of something better? She picked up one of the dog's legs and examined the soft paws. She squished the padded foot beneath her thumb.
Fleetfoot. It was a perfect name.
In fact, it felt as if the name had existed all along, and she'd finally been clairvoyant enough to stumble across it.
Yes, Fleetfoot it is.
Does it mean anything? He asked, and the dog raised her head to look at him.
It'll mean something when she outruns all of your purebreds.
Selena scooped the dog into her arms and kissed her head. She bounced her arms up and down, and Fleetfoot stared up into her eyes with a wrinkled brow. She was absurdly soft and cuddly. Dorian chuckled. We'll see. Selena set the dog down on the bed. Fleetfoot promptly crawled under the blankets and disappeared. Did you sleep well? He asked.
Yes, though it seems you didn't if you were up so early.
Listen, he began, and Selena wanted to throw herself from the balcony. Last night, I'm sorry if I was too forward with you.
He paused.
Selena, you're grimacing.
Had she been making a face?
Sorry. It did upset you then.
What did?
The kiss. Phlegm caught in her throat, and the assassin coughed.
Oh, it was nothing, she said, thumping her chest as she cleared her throat. I didn't mind it, but I didn't hate it, if that's what you're thinking.
She immediately regretted saying it. So you liked it? He grinned lazily.
No, oh, go away.
She flung herself onto her pillows, pulling the blankets above her head. She was going to die from embarrassment. Fleetfoot licked her face as she hid in the darkness of the sheets. Come now, he said. From your reaction, one would think you'd never been kissed. She threw back the blankets, and Fleetfoot burrowed farther beneath.
Of course I've been kissed, she snapped, trying not to think about Sam and what she'd shared with him. But it wasn't by some stuffed-shirt, pompous, arrogant princeling.
He looked down at his chest. Stuffed shirt?
Oh, hush up, she said, hitting him with a pillow.
She moved to the other side of the bed, got up, and walked to the balcony. She felt him watching her, staring at her back and the 3 scars she knew her low-cut nightgown did nothing to hide.
Are you going to remain here while I change?
She faced him.
He wasn't looking at her the way he had the night before. There was something wary in his gaze, and something unspeakably sad.
Her blood thrummed in her veins.
Well?
Your scars are awful, he said, almost whispering. She put a hand on a hip and walked to the dressing room door.
We all bear scars, Dorian. Mine just happen to be more visible than most. Sit there if you like, but I'm going to get dressed.
She strode from the room. Caltaine walked beside Duke Parrington through the endless tables of the palace greenhouse. The giant glass building was full of shadows and light, and she fanned herself as the steamy heat smothered her face. The man picked the most absurd places to walk. She had about as much interest in the plants and flowers as she did in a mud puddle on the side of a street. He picked a lily, snow white, and handed it to her with a bow of his head.
"For you."
She tried not to cringe at the sight of his pocked, ruddy skin and orange mustache. The thought of being stuck with him made her want to rip all the plants out by their roots and throw them into the snow.
"Thank you," she said huskily.
But Parrington studied her closely.
"You seem out of spirits today, Lady Caltaine."
"Do I?"
She cocked her head in her coyest expression.
"Perhaps today pales in comparison to the fun I had at the ball last night."
The Duke's black eyes bored into her, though, and he frowned as he put a hand on her elbow and steered her on.
"You needn't pretend with me. I noticed you watching the Crown Prince."
Caltaine gave nothing away as she raised her manicured brows and looked sidelong at him.
"Was I?"
Parrington ran a meaty finger down the spine of a fern. The black ring on his finger pulsed, and her head gave a throb of pain in response.
"I noticed him, too. The girl, specifically. She's troublesome, isn't she?"
"Lady Lillian?"
Caltaine blinked this time, unsure whether she could sag with relief just yet. He hadn't noticed her wanting the prince, but rather that she'd noticed how Lillian and Dorian clung to each other all night.
"So she calls herself," Parrington murmured.
"That's not her name?"
Caltaine asked before she could think. The Duke turned to her, his eyes as black as his ring.
"You don't honestly believe that girl is a purebred lady?"
Caltaine's heart stopped.
"She's truly not?"
And then Parrington smiled and finally told her everything. When Parrington finished, Caltaine could only stare at him.
An assassin.
Lillian Gordana was Selena Sardothian, the world's most notorious assassin. And she had her claws in Dorian's heart. If Caltaine wanted Dorian's hand, then she'd need to be far, far cleverer. Simply revealing who Lillian truly was might be enough, but it might not. Caltaine couldn't afford to take risks. The greenhouse was silent, as if it held its breath.
"How can we let this go on? How can we allow the prince to endanger himself like that?"
Parrington's face shifted for a moment, toward something pained and ugly, but it was so fast she barely noticed it above the pounding rising in her head. She needed her pipe, needed to calm down before she had a fit.
"We can't," Parrington said.
"But how can we stop them? Tell the king?"
Parrington shook his head, putting a hand on his broadsword as he thought for a moment. She examined a rose bush and traced a long nail along the curve of a thorn.
"She's to face the remaining champions in a duel," he said slowly. "And in the duel, she'll drink a toast in honor of the goddess and gods."
It wasn't just her too tight corset that stole the breath from Caltaine as the Duke went on. She lowered her hand from the thorn.
"I was going to ask you to preside over the toast as a representation of the goddess. Perhaps you could slip something into her drink."
"Kill her myself?"
Hiring someone was one thing, but to do it herself. The Duke raised his hands.
"No, no. But the king has agreed that drastic measures should be taken, in a way that will make Dorian believe things were an accident. If we were merely to give her a dose of bloodbane, not lethal, but just enough to cause her to lose control, it would give Cain the advantage he needs."
"Cain can't kill her on his own? Accidents happen all the time in duels."
Her head gave a sharp, intense throb that echoed through her body. Maybe drugging her might be easier.
"Cain thinks he can, but I don't like taking risks."
Parrington grasped her hands. His ring was ice cold against her skin, and she fought the urge to rip her hands from his grip.
"Don't you want to help Dorian? Once he's free of her..."
"Then he'll be mine. He'll be mine as he should be. But to kill for it, he'll be mine."
Then we'll be able to get him on the right path, won't we?
Parrington finished with a broad smile that made her instincts tell her to run and run and never look back. But all her mind could see was a crown and throne, and the prince who would sit by her side.
Tell me what I need to do, she said.
Chapter 41. The clock chimed 10, and Selena, seated at the small desk in her bedroom, looked up from her book. She should be sleeping, or at least trying to. Fleetfoot, dozing in her lap, yawned widely. Selena scratched her behind the ears and ran a hand along the page of the book. Word marks stared up at her, their intricate curves and angles speaking a language she couldn't yet begin to decipher. How long had it taken Nehemia to learn them? And, she wondered darkly, how could their power possibly still work when magic itself was gone? She hadn't seen Nehemia since the ball last night, hadn't dared to approach her or tell Kaol what she'd learned. Nehemia had been deceitful about her language skills and how much she knew about the word marks, but she could have any number of reasons for that. Selena had been wrong to go to the ball last night, wrong to believe Nehemia was capable of such bad things. Nehemia was one of the good ones. She wouldn't target Selena, not when they'd been friends. They had been friends. Selena swallowed the tightness in her throat and turned the page. Her heart stopped. There, looking up at her, were the symbols she'd seen near the bodies. And in the margin, written by someone centuries ago, was the explanation. For sacrifices to the Ritterak, using the victim's blood, mark the area around it accordingly. Once the creature has been summoned, these marks guide the exchange. For the flesh of the sacrifice, the beast will grant you the victim's strength. Selena fought to keep her hands from trembling as she flipped through the pages, searching for anything about the marks under her bed. When the book yielded nothing, she returned to the summoning spell. A Ritterak. That was the name of the beast? What was it? Where had it been summoned from, if it wasn't? The word gates. She pressed the heels of her palms into her eyes. Someone was actually using the word marks to open a portal to summon this creature. It was impossible, because magic was gone, but the text said word marks existed outside of magic. What if their power still worked? But Nehemia? How could her friend do such a thing? Why did she need the champion's strength? And how could she keep everything hidden so well? Yet Nehemia could easily be a cunning actress. And maybe Selena had wanted a friend, wanted someone as different and outsiderly as she was. Maybe she'd been too willing, too desperate to see anything but what she wanted to see. Selena took a steadying breath. Nehemia loved Ilway, that was certainly true, and Selena knew there was nothing Nehemia wouldn't do to keep her country safe. Unless... ice moved through Selena's veins. Unless Nehemia was here to start something bigger. Unless she didn't want to make sure the king spared Ilway at all. Unless she wanted what few dared whisper. Rebellion. And not rebellion as it was now, with rebel groups hiding out in the wilderness, but rather rebellion in the sense of entire kingdoms rising up against Otterlin, as it should have been from the start. But why kill the champions? Why not target royals? The ball would have been perfect for that. Why use word marks? She'd seen Nehemia's rooms. There were no signs of a demon beast lurking about, and nowhere in the castle where she could... Selena's eyes rose from the book. Blocked by the giant chest of drawers, the tapestry still rippled in a phantom breeze. There was nowhere in the castle to summon or hide a creature like that, except for the endless forgotten chambers and tunnels running beneath it. No, she said, standing so fast that it was all Fleetfoot could do to leap out of the way as her chair toppled over. No, it wasn't true, because it was Nehemia, because... Selena grunted as she pushed the chest to the side and folded the tapestry back from the wall. Just as it had 2 months ago, a cold, damp breeze leaked through the cracks, but it smelled nothing of roses. All of the murders had occurred within 2 days of a test. That meant tonight, or tomorrow, something would happen. The Ritterak, whatever it was, would strike again. And with the marks that she'd found painted under her bed, there was no way in hell she'd wait for it to show up. After shutting the whining Fleetfoot out of the bedroom, Selena covered the passage entry with the tapestry, wedged a book in the doorway to keep from getting locked in, and only once wished she had a weapon beyond the candlestick she carried and the makeshift knife in her pocket. Because if Nehemia had truly lied to her like that, and if Nehemia was murdering the champions, then Selena had to see it herself, if only so she could kill her with her bare hands.
Down and down she went, her breath thick in the frigid air. Water dripped somewhere, and Selena looked longingly at the middle archway as she approached the crossroads. There was no thought of escape now. What would be the point when she was so close to winning? If she'd lost, she'd sneak back here before they had a chance to ship her off to Endovir again. Selena studied the left and right side passages. The one to her left only led to a dead end. But the one on the right, that was the passage she'd taken to Elena's tomb. There she'd seen countless other passageways leading to unknown places. She stepped closer to the archway and froze when she saw the steps that descended into the murky darkness. The centuries-old dust had been disturbed. Footprints led up and down. Nehemia and her creature must have been creeping around down here, just floors below everyone else. Hadn't Varen died just after he taunted her in front of Nehemia? Selena clutched her candlestick tighter and pulled her makeshift knife out of her pocket. Step after step, she began her descent down the stairwell. Soon she could no longer see the top landing, and the bottom never came any closer. But then whispers filled the corridor, slithering off the walls. She quieted her steps and shielded her candle as she neared. It wasn't the idle chat of servants, but someone speaking rapidly, almost chanting. Not Nehemia, a man. A landing approached below, opening into a room to her left. A greenish light seeped out of it onto the stones of the stairwell, which continued on past the landing and into darkness. The hair on her arms rose as the voice became clearer. It didn't speak any tongue that she recognized. It was guttural and harsh, and grated against her ears, as if it sucked the very warmth from her bones. The man panted as he spoke, like the words burned his throat, and finally he gasped for air. Silence fell. Setting down her candle, Selena crept toward the landing and peered inside the room. The oaken door had been thrown open, a giant key turned in its rusting lock. And inside the small chamber, kneeling before a darkness so black that it seemed poised to devour the world, was Cain. Chapter 42. Cain. The person who'd gotten stronger and better as the competition went on. She thought it was his training, but it was because he'd been using the word marks and the beast they summoned to steal the dead champion's strength. He dragged a hand across the floor before the darkness, and greenish light sprung up from where his fingers passed before being sucked into the void like wraiths on the wind. One of his hands was bleeding. She didn't dare to breathe as something stirred in the darkness. There was a click of claw on stone, and a hiss like an extinguished flame. And then, stepping toward Cain on knees that bent the wrong way, like an animal's hind legs, the Ritterak emerged. It was something out of an ancient god's nightmares. Its hairless gray skin was stretched tightly across its misshapen head, displaying a gaping mouth filled with black fangs. Fangs that had ripped out and eaten Varen and Xavier's internal organs. Fangs that had feasted on their brains. Its vaguely human body sank onto its haunches, and it slid its long front arms across the stone floor. The stones whined under the claws. Cain raised his head and stood slowly as the creature knelt before him and lowered its dark eyes. Submission. Selena only realized she was trembling when she made to step away, to flee as far and as fast as she could. Elena had been right. This was evil, plain and simple. The amulet pulsed at her neck, as if urging her to run. Her mouth dry, her blood pounding in her veins, she stepped back. Cain whirled to look at her, and the Ritterak's head shot up, its slithered nostrils sniffing twice. She froze, but as she did so,
A massive wind shoved into her from behind, making her stagger into the room.
"It wasn't meant to be you tonight," Cain said. But Selena's eyes remained on the beast, who began panting. "But this opportunity is too good to go to waste."
"Cain?" was all she could say. The Ritterak's eyes, she'd never seen anything like them. There was nothing in them but hunger, endless, ageless hunger. The creature was not of this world. The word marks worked. The gates were real. She pulled the makeshift knife out of her pocket. It was pitifully small. How could hairpins make a dent in that creature's hide? Cain moved so quickly that she could only blink before he was behind her, her knife somehow now in his hand. No one, no one human could move that quickly. It was as if he were no more than shadows and wind.
"Pity,"
Cain whispered from the doorway, pocketing her knife. Selena glanced to the creature, to him, and then back.
"I'll never get to know how you wound up down here in the first place." His fingers wrapped around the door handle. "Not that I care. Goodbye, Selena."
The door slammed shut. The greenish light still seeped from the marks on the floor. Marks Cain had etched with his own blood, illuminating the creature who stared at her with those starving, relentless eyes.
"Cain?"
she whispered, backing into the door as she fumbled with the handle. She twisted and yanked. It was locked. There was nothing in this room but stone and dust. How had she let him disarm her that easily?
"Cain!"
The door wouldn't budge.
"Cain!"
she shouted, and banged on the door with a fist hard enough to hurt. The Ritterak stalked back and forth on its four long, spidery limbs, sniffing at her, and Selena paused. Why didn't it attack immediately? It sniffed at her again, and swiped at the ground with a clawed hand, striking deep enough to take out a chunk of stone. It wanted her alive. Cain had incapacitated Varen while he summoned the creature. It liked its blood hot, so it would find the easiest way to immobilize her, and then... She couldn't breathe. No, not like this. Not in this chamber where no one would find her, where Kaol would never know why she disappeared, and would forever curse her for it, where she'd never get the chance to tell Nehemia she had been wrong. And Elena. Elena said someone wanted her in the tomb to see... To see what? And then she knew. The answer lay on her right, the right passageway, the passage that led to the tomb a few levels below. The creature sank back onto its haunches, poised to spring, and in that moment, Selena came up with the most reckless and brave plan she'd ever concocted. She dropped her cape to the floor. With a roar that shook the castle, the Ritterak ran for her. Selena remained before the door, watching as it galloped at her, sparks flying from its claws as they struck stone. 10 feet away, it leapt straight toward her legs. But Selena was already running, running straight at those black, rotting fangs. The Ritterak jumped for her, and she hurtled over the snarling thing. A thunderous, splintering boom erupted through the chamber as the Ritterak shattered the wooden floor. She could only imagine what it would have done to her legs. She didn't have time to think. She landed and whirled, charging back to where the creature had crashed through the door and now sought to shake itself free of the pile of wood. She threw herself through the doorway and turned left, flying down the stairwell. She'd never make it back to her chambers alive, but if she was fast enough, perhaps she could make it to the tomb. The Ritterak roared again, and the stairwell shuddered. She didn't dare to look behind. She focused on her feet, on keeping upright as she bounded down the stairs, making for the landing below, illuminated by moonlight leaking from the tomb. Selena hit the landing, ran for the tomb door, and prayed to gods whose names she'd forgotten, but who she hoped had not yet forgotten her.
"Someone wanted me to come here on Samhuin. Someone knew this would happen. Elena wanted me to see it, so I could survive."
The creature hit the bottom landing and charged after her, so close she could smell its reeking breath. The door to the tomb was wide open, as if someone had been waiting.
"Please, please!"
Grabbing onto the side of the doorway, she swung herself inside. She gained precious time as the Ritterak skidded to a halt, missing the tomb. It only took a moment for it to recover and charge, taking off a chunk of the door as it entered. The pounding of her feet echoed through the tomb as she ran between the sarcophagi for Damaris, the sword of the ancient king. Displayed atop its stand, the blade shone in the moonlight, the metal still gleaming after 1,000 years. The creature snarled, and she heard its deep intake of breath and the scrape of nails departing stone as the Ritterak leapt for her. She lunged for the sword, her left hand wrapping around the cool hilt as she twisted in the air and swung. She only had time to see its eyes and the blur of its skin before she drove Damaris through the Ritterak's face. Pain lanced through her hand as they slammed into the wall and fell to the ground, scattering treasure. Black blood that stank of waste sprayed onto her. She didn't move. Not as she stared at those black eyes barely inches from her own. Not as she saw her right hand held between its black teeth, her blood already oozing down its chin. She just panted and shook, not taking her left hand from the hilt of the sword, even after those hungry eyes turned dull and its body sagged atop hers. It was only when the amulet throbbed again that she blinked. Everything after that became a series of steps, a dance that she had to execute perfectly, or else she'd fall apart right there in that tomb and never get up. She first pried her hand from its teeth. It burned mercilessly. An arc of gushing puncture wounds encircled her thumb, and she swayed on her feet as she shoved the Ritterak off her. It was surprisingly light, as if its bones were hollow or there were nothing inside of it. Though the world became foggy around the edges, she yanked Damaris from its skull. She used her shirt to wipe Gavin's blade clean and set it back where it belonged. That was why they brought her to the tomb on Samhuin, wasn't it? So she could see Damaris and have a way to save herself? She left the creature where it lay in a crumpled heap atop piles of jewels. Whoever had wanted to save her could clean it up. She'd had enough. Still, Selena paused beside Elena's sarcophagus and looked at the beautiful face carved from marble.
"Thank you," she said hoarsely.
Her vision blurring, she left the tomb and staggered up the stairs, clutching her bleeding hand to her chest. When she was at last safely inside her chambers, Selena crossed to her bedroom door and leaned there, panting as she unlocked it. Her wound hadn't clotted, and blood was still pouring down her wrist. She listened to it drip onto the floor. She should go into the bathing room and wash her hand. Her palm felt like ice. She should... Her legs gave out, and Selena collapsed. Her eyelids became heavy, so she closed them. Why did her heart beat so slowly? She opened her eyes to look at her hand. Her eyesight was blurry, and all she could make out was a mess of pink and red. The ice in her hand reached up her arm, down to her legs. She heard a booming, thunderous noise, a thump, 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 followed by a whine. Through her eyelids, she could see the light in the room darken. She heard a cry, female, and warm hands grabbed her face. She was so cold it almost burned. Had someone left the window open?
Lillian.
It was Nehemia. She shook Selena's shoulders.
Lillian, what happened to you?
Selena remembered little of the next few moments. Strong arms lifted her up and rushed her into the bathing chamber. Nehemia strained as she carried Selena into the bathing pool, where she stripped away Selena's clothes. Selena's hand burned when it touched the water, and she thrashed, but the princess held her firm, saying words in a tongue the assassin didn't understand. The light in the room pulsed, and her skin tingled. Selena found her arms covered in glowing turquoise marks. Word marks. Nehemia held her in the water, rocking back and forth. Blackness swallowed her up. Chapter 43. Selena opened her eyes. She was warm, and the candlelight was golden. She could smell lotus blossoms and a bit of nutmeg. She made a small noise and blinked, attempting to raise herself from the bed. What had happened? She could only recall climbing the stairs, then concealing the secret door behind the tapestry. Selena gave a start and grabbed at her tunic, gaping as she found that it had somehow turned into a nightgown, and then marveled at her hand as she lifted it into the air. It was healed, completely healed. The only remnants of the wounds was a half-moon-shaped scar between her thumb and index finger, and little bite marks from the Ritterak's lower teeth. She ran a finger over each of the chalk-white scars, tracing their curve, then wiggled her fingers to ensure no nerves had been severed. How was this possible? It was magic. Someone had healed her. She lifted herself and saw she was not alone. Nehemia sat in a chair nearby, staring at her. There was no smile on her lips, and Selena shifted as she beheld the mistrust in the young woman's eyes. Fleetfoot lay at her feet.
What happened? Selena asked.
That's what I have been waiting to ask you, said the princess in Eelway. She gestured at Selena's body. If I hadn't found you, you would have died from that bite within a few minutes. Even the blood she'd dropped on the floor had been cleaned.
Thank you, she said,
then started as she looked to the darkened sky beyond the windows.
What day is it?
If somehow 2 days had passed and she'd missed the last test...
It's only been 3 hours.
Selena's shoulders sagged. She hadn't missed it. She still had tomorrow to train and the test the day after that.
I don't understand. How did...
That's not important, Nehemia interrupted. I want to know where you received that bite. There was blood only in your bedroom, no traces of it in the hallway or anywhere else.
Selena clenched and unclenched her right hand, watching the scars stretch and contract. She had come so close to dying. She flicked her eyes to the princess, then back to her hand. Whatever Nehemia's involvement was, it wasn't with Cain.
I'm not who I pretend to be,
Selena said quietly, unable to meet her friend's eyes.
Lillian Gordana doesn't exist.
Nehemia didn't say anything. Selena made herself look her in the eye. Nehemia had saved her. How had she dared to believe that Nehemia might be the one controlling that creature? The truth was the least she owed her friend.
My name is Selena Sardothian.
Nehemia's mouth parted. Slowly, she shook her head.
But they sent you to Endovir. You were supposed to be in Endovir with...
Nehemia's eyes widened.
You speak the Eelway of the peasants,
of those enslaved in Endovir. That was how you learned.
Selena's breathing became a bit difficult. Nehemia's lips trembled.
You went to Endovir?
Endovir is a death camp, but...
Why did you not tell me? Do you not trust me?
Of course I do, she said, especially now that she'd proven beyond a doubt that she wasn't the one responsible for those murders. I was ordered by the king not to speak a word of it.
A word of what?
Nehemia said sharply, blinking back her tears.
The king knows you're here? He gives you orders?
I'm here for his amusement. Selena sat up straighter in bed. I'm here because he's hosting a competition to be the king's champion. And after I win, if I win, I'm to work for the king for 4 years as his lackey and assassin. And then I'll be freed. And my name cleared. Nehemia just looked at her, damning her with that blank stare. You think I want to be here? Selena shouted, even though it made her head pound. It was either this or Endovir. I had no choice. She put her hands on her chest. Before you start lecturing me on my morality, or before you run away and hide behind your bodyguards, just know that there's not a moment that goes by when I don't wonder what it will be like to kill for him. The man who destroyed everything that I loved. She couldn't breathe fast enough, not as the door inside her mind opened and closed, and the images that Selena had made herself forget flashed before her eyes. She closed them, wishing for darkness. Nehemia remained silent. Fleetfoot whined. In the quiet, people, places, words echoed in her mind. Then, footsteps. They brought her back. The mattress groaned and sighed as Nehemia sat. A second lighter weight joined her, Fleetfoot. Nehemia took Selena's hand in her warm, dry one. Selena opened her eyes, but stared at the wall across the room. Nehemia squeezed her hand.
You're my dearest friend, Selena. It hurt me more than I realized it would, to have things become so cold between us. To see you look at me with such distrust in your eyes, and I don't want to ever see you look at me like that again. so I wish to give to you what I have given to few before. Her dark eyes shone. Names are not important. It's what lies inside of you that matters. I know what you went through in Endovir. I know what my people endure there day after day. But you did not let the mines harden you. You did not let it shame your soul into cruelty.
The princess traced a mark on her hand, her fingers pressing into Selena's skin.
You bear many names, and so I shall name you as well.
Her hand rose to Selena's forehead, and she drew an invisible mark.
I name you Elentia.
She kissed the assassin's brow.
I give you this name to use with honor, to use when other names grow too heavy. I name you Elentia, spirit that could not be broken.
Selena was held in place. She could feel the name fall upon her like a shimmering veil. This was unconditional love. Friends like this did not exist. Why was she so fortunate as to have found one?
Come, Nehemia said brightly. Tell me about how you became Otterlin's assassin, and how you wound up in this castle exactly, and what the details are of this absurd competition.
Selena smiled slightly as Fleetfoot wagged her tail and licked Nehemia's arm.
She had saved her life.
Somehow. Answers for that would come later. So Selena spoke. The following morning, Selena walked beside Kaol, her eyes on the marble floor of the hallway. The sun radiated off of the snow in the garden, making the light in the hall nearly blinding. She'd told Nehemia almost everything. There were certain things she'd never tell anyone, and she hadn't mentioned Cain or the creature, either. Nehemia hadn't asked her again what had bitten her hand, but had stayed with her, curled up in bed as they talked long into the night. Selena, unsure how she'd ever sleep again now that she knew what Cain could do, had been grateful for the company. She pulled her cloak tighter around her. The morning was unnaturally frigid.
You're quiet today.
Kaol kept his gaze ahead of them.
Did you and Dorian have a fight?
Dorian.
He'd stopped by last night, but Nehemia had shooed him off before he could enter the bedroom. No, I haven't seen him since yesterday morning. After the events of last night, yesterday morning seemed like a week ago.
Did you enjoy dancing with him at the ball?
Were his words a bit sharp? She turned to him as they rounded a corner, heading toward a private training room. You left rather early. I would have thought you'd want to guard me the whole night.
You don't need me to watch you anymore.
I didn't need you to watch me from the start. He shrugged.
Now I know you're not going anywhere.
Outside, a howling wind kicked up a flurry of snow, sending a sparkling wave into the air. I could go back to Endovir.
You won't.
How do you know that?
I just know.
That gives me heaps of confidence. He chuckled, continuing toward the sparring room.
I'm surprised your dog didn't run after you, for all the crying she did just now.
If you had a pet, you wouldn't make fun, she said gloomily.
I've never had a pet. I never wanted one.
That's probably a blessing for whatever dog might have wound up as your companion. He jabbed her with an elbow. She grinned and elbowed him back. She wanted to tell him about Cain. She'd wanted to tell him when she saw him at her door this morning. She wanted to tell him everything. But he couldn't know. Because, she'd realized last night, if she told him about Cain and the creature he'd unleashed, then he'd ask to see the remains of the creature. And that meant taking him into the secret passage. While he might trust her enough to leave her alone with Dorian, knowing that she had access to an unguarded escape route was a test she wasn't ready to give Kaol.
Besides, I killed it. It's over. Elena's mysterious evil is vanquished. Now I'll just defeat Cain in the duel, and then no one needs to know.
Kaol stopped before the unmarked door of their practice room and whirled to face her.
I'm only going to ask you this once, and then I won't ask it again, he said,
staring at her so intensely that she shifted on her feet.
Do you know what you're getting into with Dorian?
She laughed, a harsh cawing noise. Are you giving me romantic advice? And is this for my sake or Dorian's?
Both.
I didn't realize that you cared enough about me to bother, or even notice. To his credit, he didn't take the bait. Instead, he just unlocked the door.
Just remember to use your brain, will you? He said over his shoulder, and entered the room.
An hour later, sweating and still panting from the swordplay practice, Selena wiped her brow on her sleeve as they made their way back to her rooms.
The other day, I saw you were reading Elric and Emmet, he said. I thought you hated poetry.
It's different. She swung her arms. Epic poetry isn't boring or pretentious.
Oh?
A crooked smile twisted across his face.
A poem about massive battles and boundless love isn't pretentious?
She playfully punched his shoulder, and he laughed. Surprisingly delighted at his laughter, she cackled. But then they turned a corner, and guards filled the hall, and she saw him. The King of Otterlin. Chapter 44
The King.
Selena's heart gave a screech and dove behind her spine. Each of the little scars on her hand throbbed. He strode toward them, his monstrous form filling the too small hallway, and their eyes met. She went cold and hot at once. Kaol halted and bowed low. Slowly, not wishing to find herself swinging from the gallows just yet, Selena bowed too. He stared at her with eyes of iron. The hair on her arms rose. She could feel him searching, looking for something inside of her. He knew that something was wrong, that something had changed in his castle. Something to do with her. Selena and Kaol rose and stepped aside. His head turned to examine her as he strode past. Could he see what lay beyond her flesh? Did he know that Cain had the ability to open portals, real portals, to other worlds? Did he know that even though he'd banned magic, the word marks still commanded a power of their own? Power the king could wield if he learned to summon demons like the Ritterak. There was a darkness in his eyes that felt cold and foreign, like the gaps between the stars. Could one man destroy a world? Was his ambition so consuming? She could hear the din of war. The king's head shifted to look at the hallway ahead. Something dangerous lurked about him. It was an air of death that she'd felt standing before that black void summoned by Cain. It was the stench of another world. A dead world. What was Elena's goal in demanding that she get close to him? Selena managed to walk, one step at a time, away from the king. Her eyes were far away and distant, and though she didn't look at Kaol, she felt him studying her face. Thankfully, he didn't say a word. It was nice to have someone who understood. Kaol also didn't say anything when she moved closer to him for the remainder of their walk. Kaol paced through his room, his time with Selena over until she'd train with the other champions that afternoon. After lunch, he'd return to his room to read the report detailing the king's journey. And in the past 10 minutes, he'd read the thing 3 times. He crumpled the paper in his fist. Why had the king arrived alone? And, more importantly, how had everyone in his traveling party died? It wasn't clear where he'd gone. He'd mentioned the White Fang Mountains, but why were they all dead? The king had vaguely hinted at some sort of issue with rebels poisoning their food stores, but the details were murky enough to suggest that the truth was buried somewhere else. Perhaps he hadn't explained it fully because it would upset his subjects. But Kaol was his captain of the guard. If the king didn't trust him... The clock struck, and Kaol's shoulders sagged. Poor Selena. Did she know that she looked like a frightened animal when the king appeared? He'd almost wanted to pat her on the back. And the effect the king had on her lasted long after their encounter. She'd been distant during lunch. She was incredible now, so fast he had difficulty keeping up with her. She could scale a wall with ease, and had even demonstrated by climbing up to her own balcony with nothing but her bare hands. It unnerved him, especially when he remembered she was only 18. He wondered if this was how she'd been before in Dovir. She never hesitated when they sparred, but she seemed to sink far within herself, into a place that was calm and cool, but also angry and burning. She could kill anyone, Cain included, in a matter of seconds. But if she became champion, could they let her loose into Aurelia once more? He was fond of her,
but Kaol didn't know if he could sleep at night knowing that he had retrained and released the world's greatest assassin. If she won, though, she'd be here for 4 years. What had the king thought when he saw them together laughing? Surely that hadn't been his reason for neglecting to tell him what happened to his men. No. The king